Thanks, Lynn, and hello, everyone. Welcome to the 7 Steps to Awakening with Regina Don Akers. And it's good to see you all here. I think you probably also know that we have a member meeting tonight where one of the things we're going to do is look at the teachings of Elie Ruzdahr and Michael Langford in the light of some questions that have come since people have listened to the audio interviews. Tonight, in the 7 Steps to Awakening, we are going to start with quote 718, and what I am putting in the room is a link to my first journal entry regarding quote 718. First, of course, I'm going to play a bit of a song, just kind of as an opportunity to settle and get centered. This is a long song, so I won't play all of it. I'll just play part of it. But the song is the one that's been inspiring me for the last couple of days. It's by Jesus Culture, and it's called Everything and Nothing Less. Because it's about a 7.5 minute song, so it continues for quite a ways. But I love these lyrics. I love especially the lyrics that say, let's see if I can find it so I can read it to you exactly. Everything and nothing less, my best, my all, you deserve my every breath, my life, my song. Everything and nothing less, my best, my all, you deserve my every breath, my life, my song. So, as I mentioned, that's the song that's been inspiring me the last couple of days. By the way, for those of you who don't know, I recently posted my YouTube inspiration playlist in Facebook. It's at Regina Dawn Akers Thoughts and Teachings. I also went ahead and put it on my website under the More, M-O-R-E, More menu. You can find the YouTube playlist there. The YouTube playlist, one of the recommendations that Michael Langford makes is that before you meditate, you listen to one or two inspirational songs that really open your heart. Because he says that if you meditate with an open heart, the benefit is much greater than if you're meditating, kind of from the head in an intellectual way. And I like following that advice. And so this YouTube playlist, this is actually the videos. I'll watch one or two videos before I meditate. And these are the videos that I use for that inspiration. So again, if you want to go and take a look at the playlist, please do. All right, so as I mentioned, we're going to start tonight with quote 718 in the Seven Steps to Awakening. This is quote 718. I am pure consciousness, devoid of ego sense, and all pervading. There is neither birth nor death for this consciousness. Again, that quote is, I am pure consciousness, devoid of ego sense, and all pervading. There is neither birth nor death for this consciousness. So, in the journal at 718A, I wrote, when the mind speaks, I am, the unreal is being experienced. Too much attention on the unreal is like looking away from reality and not seeing it, although reality is always present. I think this morning during Gloria's service, somebody, it might have been Jim Dunn, somebody wrote in the room that the ego is Latin for I am. Is that true, Jim? Did you type that in the room? And I didn't look that up. I didn't double check that knowledge that was typed in the room. But that really fits very much with what this quote is saying. When the mind speaks I am, the unreal is being experienced. Now often the term I am, which is equivalent to is, often I am is used to point to the truth rather than the ego, right? So we're used to I am as being a pointer to truth. But we all know the ego says I am too. Right? I am hot, I am cold, I am hungry, I am angry, I am Regina, I am a minister, I am a mother, I am 55, I had to think about that one. I am whatever. That's the ego, right? The ego's I am is followed typically with some type of a definition, some type of a thought. And so, when the mind speaks, I am, the unreal is being experienced. And then too much attention on the unreal is like looking away from reality and not seeing it, although reality is always present. In the Ellie Ruzdar interview, right, Ellie used the word ignorance a lot. And she defined ignorance as ignoring truth. Ignoring truth. And that's what this journal entry says. Too much attention on the unreal, which would be the ego's I am. It's who I am in the opinion of the mind, right? Too much attention on the unreal is like looking away from reality and not seeing it. That would be ignoring reality, as Elie Ruzdar said. So that would be ignorance. Too much attention on the unreal is like looking away from reality and not seeing it, although reality is always present. And, you know, that's a simple thought, but a pretty amazing thought, too, if you really look at it. Every time I am having thoughts or conversation about who I am, I'm focused on unreality. I'm ignoring truth. I'm being ignorant. And someone once told me that Jesus said, every time I talk about myself, I tell a lie. And I always wondered, where the heck did Jesus say that? And in The Guiding Light, I ran across a very similar, it was worded differently, but a very similar thought in the book of John. And I wonder if she just had some really, you know, modern translation, or maybe she just remembered the content more than the actual scripture. But there is something in the book of John, I can't remember the exact quote right now, but basically what Jesus says, using different words, is, every time I talk about myself, I tell a lie. And that lie is, I'm talking about me as something other than what I really am. Somewhere recently, I think I might have been listening to Vernon Howard, but I could be mistaken about that. But somewhere recently, I'm pretty sure it's Vernon Howard, because I'm hearing kind of a mean voice, and y'all, in my memory, y'all who know have listened to any Vernon Howard, you know he can get that mean voice, right? So I think it was Vernon Howard. But, you know, Vernon Howard, or whoever it was that I was listening to, was really emphasizing how unhealthy conversation is. How unhealthy conversation is. Because when we get in conversation and we start talking, we're talking about the ego I am. That's who we're talking about. As soon as we get into conversation and we start talking, we step into ignorance. We step into ignoring truth. And it is quite interesting if you watch this. Everybody's agreeing with me. Y'all know it's true. I love preaching to the choir, as they say. But pay attention to ourselves. You know, even when we're on spiritual retreat, right? We'll sit there at the Awakening Together Fall Retreat in Colorado Springs and, you know, have a very enlightening morning, whatever that enlightening morning looks like. And then we go to lunch and it just comes crashing down once we get in that conversation around the lunch table, and we start talking about my kids and my vacation plans and my aches and pains and my this and my that. In fact, at the Regina Donacres retreat last year in 2015, we had a rule that we practiced during the week of that retreat, and the rule was you couldn't talk about anything that wasn't present. And present, you know, we were a little bit liberal on present. For example, Pikes Peak was down the road a little bit. And if you'd never been to Colorado and you were sent with someone who had, you could ask questions about Pikes Peak, right? Because that was fairly present. You know, so you could talk to someone about Pikes Peak and what's up there and can you really drive up there and, you know, all that kind of stuff. You could talk about what happened in the morning session, you know, and what that meant to you and all of that. You could tell somebody that their blouse looked lovely. You could talk about the weather. But you couldn't talk about anything that wasn't present. And the reason we had this rule was because of exactly what we're talking about right now. Because usually at spiritual retreats or anywhere, but it's just so incredibly obvious at spiritual retreats, people get right up, right after an enlightening morning, and immediately step back into ignorance. I remember taking a walk one day with a group of people, and this walk was supposed to be a spiritual walk. It had a spiritual purpose. We weren't just out for exercise. And some of us were being very quiet. You know, that's how we wanted to do it, with our mouths shut. But there were others in the group that were walking along. We were even in another country. We weren't even in America at the time. And they're walking along chattering about their bank accounts. And, you know, you just name it. They were chattering about it while we were walking on this walk. So we don't seem to even be very good at leaving the ego I am behind, even when we're on a spiritual retreat. So imagine what we're like, you know, at home, you know, in our regular social situations, whether it's work or with family or whatever. So what we want to do now, I suppose, is simply bring our attention to this. You know, simply bring our attention to this. Notice that when we begin talking about the ego I am, we are fully in ignorance. When we begin talking about the ego I am, we are fully in ignorance. And just kind of let that, you know, just kind of let that be. What you might find if you let that be, you might find that your talking about the ego I am begins to reduce. And I don't ever recommend, you know, judging yourself and finding yourself guilty or bad or, you know, a poor spiritual student or anything like that. I don't think that's at all helpful. That's still ego. But maybe sometimes you'll catch yourself right in the middle of talking about that ego I am, and you'll decide, you know, I don't really want to finish this story. I'm just going to find a way to kind of bring it to a close and drop it real quick because I don't want to go any further in this. And if we can start noticing when we're talking about the ego I am a little more and start losing interest in that, right, start not talking about the ego I am as much, then every time we consciously choose not to talk about the ego I am because we want to know our true self, we're actually stepping towards reality. Out of ignorance, right? We're stepping out of ignorance. So again, when the mind speaks I am, the unreal is being experienced. Too much attention on the unreal is like looking away from reality and not seeing it, although reality is always present. So I'm going to move on to 718B. And before I read 718B, I'm just going to read 718 from the Seven Steps to Awakening again. I am pure... Oh, by the way, I want to tell you all something before I start. Boo-hoo. Rewind. At the Regina Dawn Acres retreat this year in 2016, one of the things that I will give everyone is a silence badge. And you will have the ability to put that badge on and off as you choose to. Which means if you don't want to be in silence, you don't have to put the badge on at all. If you want to be in silence the whole time, you can leave that badge on the whole time. And if you kind of want to go in and out, you know, back and forth, then you can do that. But anyone who wants to be in silence will have a badge, and that way others will know not to come up and talk to you. They'll know to leave you there. So optional silence. All right, so let's read 718 from the Seven Steps to Awakening. I am pure consciousness, devoid of ego sense, and all-pervading. There is neither birth nor death for this consciousness. All right, so 718B. When humanness is perceived as self, one attaches mind's hopes for happiness to a temporary vapor that cannot last. Yet ongoing reality is fully present, unaffected, and not interfering with the belief in a self. Ooh, that's interesting. So when humanness is perceived as self, one attaches mind's hopes for happiness to a temporary vapor that cannot last. Teddy is asking, will putting on the badge make me silent? I don't know if it will in your head, but it will keep you away from the outer chatter, which gives you a better chance. keep you away from being pulled into conversation when you don't want to be pulled into conversation. It will let people know what you're doing. So when we look at 718B, you know, one thing I'm kind of reminded of is my boyfriend, Ron. Ron, you know, says from time to time, you know, that he's not going to get old. You know, he says, I'm not going to, you know, I don't know. I've said things a couple of times like, well, you know, when we get old, we can dot, dot, dot. You know, and he says, I'm not going to get old. And I just giggle. And, you know, my dad once told me that if you're lucky, you'll get old because you live that long, you know. So if you're lucky, you'll get old. But you know, I think that there is most definitely a part of us, and I think Ron's expressing it when he says, I'm not going to get old. I think there is a part of us that thinks this person, this human, this body, this me, this ego I am, is eternal. You know, maybe some of us are pretty good at realizing that we aren't eternal and that this temporary self will end. Especially if you've been given some kind of a terminal diagnosis, or if you've lost people that are really close to you and it's made an impact on you. But I think generally people think of me as eternal. They don't really think of me as ending. And that might be, you know, maybe just taking our knowledge, our true knowledge that we are eternal, and just projecting it into the wrong place. Right, we're taking true knowledge and then we're misplacing that true knowledge by placing it with something that is temporary. But we don't really think about, usually, we don't really think about the fact that we're going to die. We kind of live on the assumption that we're going to live forever. This me, this Regina. Regina is forever, or whoever you are in your case, right? That I'm forever. And that, you know, my personality with what I like and what I want and what I don't like and what I don't want, that all of that is a permanent part of who I am, and that's going to live forever. And then the average person plans their future based on that assumption, right? Plans their future based on that assumption. Now, that's what the first sentence in this journal entry is talking about. When humanness is perceived as self, one attaches mind's hopes for happiness to a temporary vapor that cannot last. And I love to pause and look at that, those last five words. Temporary vapor that cannot last. How many of you really, 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 really see your ego I am self as a temporary vapor that cannot last? Right? And even that word vapor is very, very interesting, because a vapor, you know, a vapor is something that you can't really even touch. I mean, you know, it's so temporary and so unreal. And here we are saying that this ego I am self, the same one that we talk about, right? I am, you know, going to do this, and I don't like that, and I'm for Trump, or I'm for Clinton, or I'm, you know, I'm, right? That person is a temporary vapor that cannot last. You know, if we really take those words in, a temporary vapor that cannot last, we might start to take the ego I am a lot less seriously. Because that's not who I am. I cannot be, the real I cannot be a temporary vapor that will not last. So why should I pretend to be? that? Why should I, you know, whether I like, whether I'm a Trump person or whether I'm a Clinton person or maybe even the, you know, one of those Bernie Sanders holdouts, right? He's still in there. Why should I get upset if the other one is elected president? Because that's not even my opinion. That opinion belongs to a temporary vapor that cannot last. It's not even mine. It's like the Course says, it's not your real thoughts, right? So if we really take in that the person, the personality, the me-ness, the ego I am is a temporary vapor that cannot last, we might be able to start disregarding some of those opinions, ideas, preferences, desires, dreams, attachments, right? And when we do that, we're starting to let go of the belief that I am the temporary vapor, the ego I am. So when humanness is perceived as self, one attaches mind's hopes for happiness to a temporary vapor that cannot last. Yet, ongoing reality is fully present, unaffected, and not interfering with the belief in a self. I think that last little part is pretty interesting, not interfering with the belief in a self. I don't know if any of you practice awareness, watching awareness in any way, but if you do, you know that awareness does not interfere with anything. Awareness just is. It is just present. I often liken it to the space in this room, right? This room that I'm in, once upon a time was Danielle's bedroom. And Danielle left, and we moved the furniture out, and I got new office furniture, we moved the furniture in, and now it's my office. Now, if the room somehow had an ego sense, the room once upon a time would have said, I am Danielle's bedroom, right? I am Danielle's bedroom. And then there would have been this death with a little bitty empty space in between for a few days. And then a new birth. I am Regina's office, right? Now I'm somebody else. I am Regina's office. But the space in the room doesn't do that. The space in the room doesn't identify with whatever's in the room, right? Well, the awareness is like the space in the room. It doesn't identify with the personality, but also the space in the room did not say, stop, don't take Danielle's bedroom furniture out of here. I am Danielle's bedroom. Don't, you know, the space in the room did not stop us from taking Danielle's furniture out and bringing my office furniture in, right? So the space in the room or the awareness does not interfere with your belief that you are a person. So it's always present. It's always right here. You can turn your attention to it. You can absorb your attention in it at any time that you choose to because it's always available. And yet, if you choose to be ignorant, as defined by Elie Ruzdahl, right, ignoring the truth, and you want to focus all of your attention on the ego I am as who you are, the awareness obviously permits that. I mean, it doesn't have judgment in it. It's not going to have any judgment in it to interfere in any way. So it's right here, completely available, and yet we're allowed to choose ignorance for as much as we want. And this is where the question comes, especially for those of us that are here. This is where the question comes, what do I want? What do I want? Do I want to be ignorant? Do I want to believe that I am a temporary vapor that cannot last? Or Do I want to begin to remove my attention away from all of those thoughts and beliefs and feelings and begin to place my attention on the non-interfering, empty awareness that I really am? That's the question. So when humanness is perceived as self, one attaches mind's hopes for happiness to a temporary vapor that cannot last. Yet ongoing reality is fully present, unaffected, and not interfering with the belief in a self. So where do we want to place our attention? How do we want to see ourselves? As the temporary vapor or as that constantness? I'm going to go to 718C. And again, I'm going to read 718 from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. I am pure consciousness, devoid of ego sense, and all-pervading. There is neither birth nor death for this consciousness. And if you look at my example that I used a moment ago of the space in this room, I mean, you can see the space in this room saying this, right? I am, in this case, it would be, I am pure space, devoid of ego sense. I do not see myself as Danielle's bedroom. I do not see myself as Regina's office. I am pure space, devoid of ego sense, and all-pervading. There is neither birth nor death for this consciousness. In fact, if you were to completely tear down this house, the space would remain unaffected, right? It has no birth, no death. The space was before the house was built. The space was when the previous owners had whatever they had in here. The space was when it was Danielle's bedroom. The space is now that it's my office. And if we were to tear this house down completely, the space would still be. So you see, looking at the space in the room is really a wonderful analogy for who we are. I am pure consciousness, devoid of ego sense and all-pervading. There is neither birth nor death for this consciousness. All right, let's look at the journal entry 718C. Reality is not of the mind, nor is it the ideas or images that mind creates and attaches to. All of mind, all of its ideas and experiences, although apparently bold, has not truly overshadowed reality at all. So let's go back to the example of the space in the room. I have actually a very nice office. I need to start by telling you that. It's really very nice. I have this beautiful desk. It's like an L-shaped desk. It's in the corner. It's really a lovely, lovely desk. I have beautiful artwork. You know, there's a picture of Ramana Maharshi feeding a monkey, a picture of Arunachala with the sun right over the peak. There's Jesus meditating on a rock. You know, I have a very nice Buddha statue here, a lovely picture, a big framed picture of the mission in Santa Barbara. I won't go on, but you know, just lovely artwork all around. And then I have this beautiful purple sofa where I sit and meditate. It's really gorgeous curtains, you know. And when people walk in my office, usually, to be honest, it kind of takes their breath away for a moment. They go, it's such a beautiful office. Regina, I love your office. You know, this is what they say, right? Okay. Well, with that in mind, let's look at the second part of 718C. All of the mind, all of its ideas and experiences, although apparently bold, has not truly overshadowed reality at all. So let's think of all of this furniture and all of this artwork as the mind, right? Because that's what's temporary. The furniture and the artwork can be moved in and out of the room. When people walk into my office, that's what they notice. They notice the furniture. They notice the artwork. No one has ever walked in my room and turn their attention to the space in the room. Never. It hasn't happened once. The eyes, the attention immediately goes to the objects. The eyes, the attention immediately goes to the mind. So the mind or the objects are so bold, right? They attract the attention completely. However, the space is incredibly present. In fact, when they walk in the door and walk across the room to my purple sofa and sit down, they walk right through the space. The space is incredibly evident, and yet no attention is paid to it. It's taken for so much for granted that it gets zero attention. That's the way our true self is. That's the way our true self is. I mean, right this moment, every single one of us is aware, right? I mean, I don't know whether you're liking what I'm saying or not liking what I'm saying, but you couldn't do either if you weren't aware of what I'm saying. Or maybe you're not even hearing me because you're paying attention on Facebook or something, right? But you couldn't be paying attention to Facebook if you weren't aware. So the awareness is like the space in the room. It's not truly overshadowed by the bold mind. Because without awareness, we wouldn't even see the bold mind. It's just that we give the awareness no attention. Because our inner eye and our outer eyes immediately go to the objects, go to the mind. So again, 718C says, reality is not of the mind. That's like saying the space is not of the furniture, right? Reality is not of the mind, nor is it the ideas or images that mind creates and attaches to, right? Nor is it the desk or the sofa or the artwork. All of mind, all of its ideas and experiences, although apparently bold, so bold that's always where our attention seems to go. All of mind, all of its ideas and experiences, although apparently bold, has not truly overshadowed reality at all. Awareness is just as present and just as obvious as the space in the room. We simply give it no attention. But it's obvious, isn't that amazing? And we give it no attention. All right, let's move on to 718. Oh, no, 719A. That's the end of 718. So we'll go to 719A. One thing, I'm reading 719 from the Seven Steps to Awakening. One thing still remains to be renounced, your ego sense. If the heart abandons the mind, there is realization of the absolute. I'll read that again. One thing still remains to be renounced, your ego sense. If the heart abandons the mind, there is realization of the absolute. So this is 719A in the journal. If reality is always present, unaffected by illusions, and never truly overshadowed, how can it seem to be not known? How can it seem to be not known? The answer is simple. One is attached to the one fundamental confusion. One likes the idea that the unreal is real. And one does not want to let go of this idea because one fears the loss of what he likes. a couple weeks ago, I don't know, somehow, Jasmine and I don't talk about spirituality very often, but somehow we were talking about spirituality, and she was open to me showing her the true self awareness, because she had no idea what it was, no idea, right? So we were in the backyard, and what I had her do was close her eyes, and there was a stick nearby, so I picked up the stick and I started poking her with the stick. She's like, ouch, ouch, you know, and I'm poking her with the stick. I said, okay, Jasmine. I said, I want you to stop for a moment. I said, I'm going to poke you. You already know what that feels like, so you're prepared. It won't be a surprise. I'm going to poke you. And what I want you to do, at first, you'll feel me poking you with the stick. Then I want you to kind of take a breath and kind of take a step back inside of yourself and look at, you know, with your eyes closed, look at where I'm poking you with the stick. I was poking her on the leg. Look at that. And so I poked her, and she's like, ow! But then she, you know, took that step back inside with her eyes closed, and I'm still poking her. And she goes, ah, I see. She got it. And I said, so do you see that you're the unaffected awareness, that you weren't being poked, the body was? She goes, yeah, I see that. Now, of course, she immediately, boom, dropped it, right? Like, hasn't given that a bit of attention, not even a thought since then, because she's not at all interested. As Ellie Ruzadar would say, her mind is not mature. She's not at all interested, so she didn't spend any time contemplating that or seeking that, right? But she saw it. She got it, right? But she wasn't interested because she's too busy being Jasmine. And she has no interest right now at all in not being Jasmine. And, you know, this is really what, you know, here I am, I'm supposed to be talking about this next, but this is really what Ellie Ruzadar was telling us. The immature mind, she said, was hardwired with ignorance to ignore the truth. And it has no interest in the truth. She said, I could set a 5-year-old child down and point it out to the 5-year-old child and they would see it. Just like Jasmine saw it, but they would have no interest in it. And she said, that's the way the immature mind is. It has no interest in it. In other words, the immature mind, in Ellie Ruzadar's language, is still very, very interested in being the ego I am. Whether I'm an ego I am who is, you know, ambitious and going to college and, you know, building a life, or whether I'm the ego I am who has lots of pains and seems to be suffering all the time and woe is me. You know, it doesn't even matter whether it seems to be what we would call a positive ego I am or a more negative victim ego I am. Either way, the immature mind is more interested in being the ego I am. And as a result, it has no interest in the truth. Just like the people who walk into my office literally have no interest in noticing the space. All of their interest goes immediately to the furniture. So, if reality is always present, unaffected by illusions, and never truly overshadowed, how can it seem to be not known? The answer is simple. One is attached to the one fundamental confusion. One likes the idea that the unreal is real. This me, I like the idea that this is me. And one does not want to let go of this idea because one fears the loss of what he likes. So, if we want to be the ego I am, simultaneously, we are choosing not to abide as the true I am. It's that simple. And again, pretty interesting to pay attention to. Like I said, if you go to like a spiritual retreat where supposedly our purpose is awakening, and then how quickly, as soon as, you know, whatever is happening at the retreat, when it comes to an end and we're on break or we're on lunch, how quickly we return to the conversation of the ego I am. Which one do we really want to be? Where does our attention drift? Where does our interest drift? Right? Where does our interest drift? Am I more interested in the ego I am than the true I am? That's the question. Am I more interested in the ego I am than the true I am? So let's go to 719B. Again, we're contemplating quote 719, and it says, "One thing still remains to be renounced, your ego sense. If the heart abandons the mind, there is realization of the absolute." So let's look at 719B. "The easiest way to end all problems and all suffering, which is also the easiest way to let go of the one fundamental confusion, is to keep one's attention focused on reality. One likes the idea that the unreal is real, but one loves the truth of reality. When one uses time to remain focused on reality, the natural love of truth for truth draws one to its true self. And detachment from a temporary plaything idea occurs naturally and spontaneously." So that's pretty cool. You know, what this journal entry is saying is, sure, we like being the ego I am, but we love being the true I am. And so all we have to really do is give being the true I am a chance. And if we give being the true I am a chance, we will discover that love that is much more than like. We will discover that love and we will be drawn into it. And again, this is the purpose of meditation and contemplation. It's to give yourself a chance to notice how much you love the true I am. You know, I've had these periods of time, which I'm sure probably everyone has, where, you know, for a time I'm really into, I'll say the contemplation, because in the past I didn't really meditate. So like contemplating the seven steps to awakening. Like in 2012, I took a whole year off from most work. I did very little work for a whole year. And I contemplated the seven steps to awakening all day. And I was so deep in love. I mean, just so deep in love. And then the very next year was a stark contrast. Because what happened at the end of 2012 was I received the guidance to start awakening together. And when we started awakening together, there was so much to be done. So many policies to write, so many things to figure out, a website to build. And I did some contemplating. In fact, what we're reading today is from March 25th, 2013. So I did some contemplating in 2013. But there would be days where I would just get up and go straight to work because I had so much work to do. Days and days. And this went on for like a year at least, you know, just focusing on work. When I finally got back into the groove of putting spirituality first, getting up and contemplating and spending my time there, do you know what the feeling was? You probably do. It was the feeling of I'm home again. I'm myself again. Like when I was that Regina who was focused on work, I wasn't who I really am. When I was the ego I am, I was in no way being or not even being pointed towards the true I am. And to come back to the contemplation just felt like, it's me again. I mean, the real me, right? I'm home again and where I belong. And so that's the beauty of contrast. You find the difference between what you like, the ego I am, and what you love, the true I am. But you have to give it a chance. If you never stop, if you never spend time in meditation and contemplation, you never discover how much you love that true I am. And you don't give that true I am a chance to just draw you in through love, right? Remember, that true I am is not going to interfere with your desire to be ignorant, your desire to ignore it. But if you give it a chance, you'll discover what you really love. And then, of course, you'll be giving more and more and more time in that direction because you love it. You know, one thing Elie Ruzdar said to us was that meditation cannot be a discipline. Well, it's not a discipline when you realize that you love it, right? It's not a discipline, but you have to give it that chance. It may be a discipline in the beginning because you're changing habits, and changing habits always seems to take some discipline. At least it does for me. But once you start to sense that love, it's not a discipline, right? So 719B, again, the easiest way to end all problems and all suffering, which is also the easiest way to let go of the one fundamental confusion, is to keep one's attention focused on reality. One likes the idea that the unreal is real, but one loves the truth of reality. When one uses time to remain focused on reality, the natural love of truth for truth draws one to its true self. And detachment from a temporary plaything idea occurs naturally and spontaneously. All right, so let's look at 719C. Again, we're contemplating the quote from the Seven Steps to Awakening 719, so this is the original quote. One thing still remains to be renounced, your ego sense. If the heart abandons the mind, there is realization of the absolute. So 719C. Self-inquiry places one's attention on awareness. Attention focused on awareness is awareness watching awareness. Awareness watching awareness invokes the natural love of self. Herein lies the secret of awakening. Was it last weekend when I was in North Carolina? I think it was. Last weekend I was in North Carolina at a retreat. And it was a silent retreat, although we did have one meal before the silence began. We were sitting around and talking. And someone asked me, it was someone else who was a Michael Langford student like I am. And he asked me if I practiced awareness, watching awareness, or if I practiced loving consciousness. And I said, wow, you know, I think I practice both. And in fact, I really practice three things that go together for me. And they're all right here in this journal entry. I practice first self-inquiry. Because self-inquiry places my attention on awareness. That's the tool I use to shift my attention from objects and thought and turn it around and place my attention on awareness. Self-inquiry is the tool. So first I practice self-inquiry. And in fact, in the beginning part of meditation, when the mind is often a little more active in the beginning, right, I use self-inquiry, you know, pretty consistently, until the mind quiets down and the attention is resting a little more steadily in awareness without the need for self-inquiry. Once the attention is resting in awareness without the need for self-inquiry, I drop the self-inquiry. So it's a temporary tool. When I first place my attention on awareness, I would say it feels like awareness watching awareness. You know, It's peaceful, it's quiet, you know, but it's just awareness watching awareness. But then what happens naturally, and I don't feel like I do this, as I stay on awareness, at some point it's almost like I slide down a slide deeper into awareness. Like at first I'm kind of on the edge of it, and then I slide down this slide, and this part just happens. I slide down this slide and I'm deeper in awareness, and when I hit that, the heart blows open and there's this love, and then it feels like it naturally shifts to loving consciousness meditation. And then I'm sitting there loving awareness, kind of, you know, you watch it and love it simultaneously. So the answer to the question, what do I practice, which is the question I was asked last week at the retreat, I practice all three. You know, I practice all three. I practice self-inquiry to move one's attention to awareness. I practice awareness, watching awareness until that slide happens and I slide deeper and the heart opens and then I'm sitting in loving consciousness. Now, for those of you who have no idea what I'm talking about, self-inquiry is not only taught by Ramana Maharshi. It's actually taught by many people. But right now, Ramana Maharshi seems to be the famous one that gets the credit for that. But actually, self-inquiry was practiced long before Ramana Maharshi was born. But Ramana Maharshi taught self-inquiry, so you can learn about self-inquiry from Ramana Maharshi. And then awareness, watching awareness, and the loving consciousness methods of meditation are taught by Michael Langford. The awareness, watching awareness meditation is taught in his book, The Direct Means to Eternal Bliss. And the loving consciousness meditation is taught in his book, How to Live a Life That Knows Only Love. And so, like I said, I use all three every day. So, 719C says, self-inquiry places one's attention on awareness. Attention focused on awareness is awareness watching awareness. Awareness watching awareness invokes the natural love of self, true self. Herein lies the secret of awakening. Yeah. So, that, I think, is as far as we will go tonight, because next would be quote 720, and we only have 3 minutes left, so we obviously don't have time for 720. So let me just spend a few minutes playing another song, and then we'll come back for our member meeting. Here's a song about the ego I am. This is by the Beatles, kind of fun to listen to. This is what we're like when we're listening to the ego I am. I, me, mine. I, me, mine. almost went to a Kansas song.
I'm looking to make sure I'm saying this right.